Hello, welcome to another episode of the podcast by Progressus Group, which we are shooting on the occasion of the event Singularity U Czech Summit, which Progressus is a proud part of. My name is Tomáš Braverman, and I'm an ex-CEO of Heureka Group, which is the biggest e-commerce platform in the 9 countries of CEE. Let's get to our guest. I'm really happy to have here Mick Mann. Thanks, Mick, for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Mick is a CEO and co-founder of Africa Rare startup, also a co-CEO of Singularity U South Africa, but generally storyteller, futurist, entrepreneur, investor, and speaker, right? Did I forget about anything important?
I think that's good.
That's good. Mick, yesterday I attended to your presentation, which was named How to Do Business in Metaverse. It was really interesting. Let's start talking about the metaverse itself. I'm pretty sure most of the listeners do know what's a metaverse, but very shortly, tell us what it is. And more importantly, describe us actually the environment nowadays. As far as I know, there are some 3 metaverses which are like not dominating, but competing against one another. So how the environment look actually these days?
Yeah, so the metaverse, the way I like to think of it very simply is that it's the next evolution of computing. So we've been, you know, we've been living in these virtual worlds for very long already in a 2D way. So how much time do people spend on their phones, on their laptops, on their desktops, on TV screens, you know, watching and engaging and participating in different content that it's become sort of totally natural to just look at your phone for an hour, this flat device.
What is your average, by the way? Do you measure it? Because my iPhone...
You don't want to know my average.
No, tell me, and be honest.
It must be like 10 hours
no.
or something. Yeah. That's, you know, so we're big, you know, we are engaged in this digital format so heavily, and it's so pivotal to our lives currently, to connecting with others, to sharing ideas, to learning. So the metaverse is just the next evolution of the same connection we have with the digital environment, except it's now in 3D. It's in 3 dimensions. And if you're talking about the decentralized metaverses, it's encompassing various technologies such as blockchain technology, Web3, crypto, and AI. And it's how to converge all of these technologies in a 3D world so that we can have a much more immersive experience and feel that sense of presence in the like we do in the physical world, in the digital world. So the metaverse is really these 3D virtual environments that you can do all of these incredible things like educate, entertain, you know, looking at retail. You can engage with these things, but just in a more in a 3D way, and feel like you're there with someone else. And for me, the one of the other main benefits of the metaverse is that through blockchain technology, it allows for true digital ownership. You can actually own something in the digital format now that you can prove you own, that is secure, and there's no discrepancy. It's not like it's duplicated, because it's on a ledger, and everyone can see it, and it's public.
This is a topic which I definitely want to talk to, you know, the expensive pieces of land and how, like, I mean, it's crazy, yeah?
Yeah.
But like, back to my question, how does the environment of the different metaverses look like? I know that you're a co-founder of one of them, the Africa Rare, but like the biggest are the Americans ones, right?
Yes. So currently the biggest players or users of the metaverse currently are gamers. Gaming has been a great intro into the metaverse, because you go into a 3D world, you've got tasks, you build up your characters, you start embodying these different avatars, these different players, you interact with NPCs, non-player characters, you interact with other human beings that might be thousands of miles away from you. And gaming has really seen massive, massive adoption, you know, in these spaces, with Roblox probably being one of the biggest metaverses. Currently, I think that they get something around 60 million users a month. Yeah, so I'm sure that number will keep increasing. And then you've got other, but that's a centralized metaverse. So the current state of Roblox is that it's centralized and the founders and the owners decide the fate of Roblox, not the users. Whereas a decentralized metaverse allows the users to own the digital assets on a blockchain, and they can decide what they want to do with those assets. And they're all focusing on becoming a DAO, a decentralized autonomous organization, so that it can be community owned and community governed. And you've got metaverses in America, such as the Sandbox, which is a gaming metaverse again, creating these gaming experiences that looks very similar to Roblox or Minecraft in its design. And it's this voxel style artwork that's very similar to Roblox that kids are used to. They all enjoy. And then you've got Decentraland, which is one of the earliest other metaverses that launched in 2017, which is more of a social engagement metaverse, similar to what we're trying to do with Africa Rare. So it's a social metaverse, so where you can actually add value to others through social interaction, either through entertaining them, educating them, you know, having people just hang out. We ran a Twitter Spaces in Ubuntu Land the other day, where we had 40 guests book tickets to be in the live studio audience, and everyone else was listening on Spaces for the overflow. But the live studio audience all got gifts at the end, digital asset gifts. So, yeah, so those are some of the different metaverses that are out there.
And okay, and you mentioned the decentralized metaverse where you can own something. In the metaverse, it's usually a piece of a land, correct me if I'm wrong, but like that's the most common ownership position. And I was Googling it yesterday and I found out that the most expensive piece of land in one of the metaverses was worth $5 million, something like that. Crazy.
Yeah, so if you look at the prices, I mean, the prices have varied quite dramatically. When Decentraland first launched, they sold their plots in 2017 for $20 a plot. Then in the bull run in the market, in November 2021, at the peak, to buy a single plot in Decentraland cost you $25,000, right? And some of the other bigger plots were in the millions of dollars, in the hundreds of thousands of the millions of dollars. Same with Sandbox. To buy a single plot in Sandbox was around $15,000 to $25,000 in the peak. And even in Axie Infinity, which is another gaming metaverse, I think that sold for a couple of million dollars, some of their plots of land in their Genesis area, which is very close to their main resource center in that game. So but the prices have varied dramatically over the last couple of years with the bull run and the bear market that we've seen over the last 2 years in the crypto blockchain world. So the prices have come down. But if you look at from where they started to where they are now, they're still either hundreds of percent or thousands of percent up from where they originated. So they still are if you invested at the beginning, you still have done really well.
Got it. By the way, if I'm correct, what makes the pieces of plots of land most expensive is like neighboring Hollywood stars, right?
So it depends. In Sandbox, that makes a difference. So I've bought land in over 20 metaverses. So, and they all have different guidelines and formats that create the value based on the land. So in Sandbox, I've got land next to Walking Dead. And that's, you know, for a very big zombie community of people that love zombies. And, you know, around...
Are you a fan too?
I'm a big fan, yeah, yeah. So, you know, we're busy creating a zombie game for our land in the Sandbox. Whereas there was Snoop Dogg land. And you know, if you're into Snoop Dogg and rap music and that type of thing, then you bought land around Snoop Dogg and you become his neighbor. And I think I saw, you know, somebody buy land for $800,000 near Snoop Dogg when they did that land sale. Whereas different metaverses have different rules depending on and different applications of what you can do with that land. So there's quite a lot of variance in the value of the land and the design. And but it's not only land that you can purchase. You can also purchase avatars. You can purchase wearables for your avatars to upgrade them so that you can identify
clothes unique. And stuff like that.
So like, I own one of Snoop Dogg's collections. He launched the doggies in the Sandbox, which is a collection of 10,000 Snoop Dogg characters. And I happen to be lucky enough to get number one. So I've got the number one in the, out of 10,000 in his collection, right? And now when I walk around the sandbox as my, it's called the dope robot. When I walk around as the dope robot, people come up to me like, oh my gosh, it's the dope robots here, you know? Because they all know that that's like the top in the collection. So it really matters, you know, what you, just like in real life, how you identify yourself, how you're portraying your identity to others, you know, and people like to flex who they are or what they become and that type of thing. It's the same in the metaverse, and you can buy wearables, avatars, land, you can buy different inventory, maybe it's weapons in certain games, or maybe it's, you know, things to speed up your game or to give you some type of benefit. There's also digital services. You can buy NFTs that are digital services. Maybe you need to book a meeting room and you need to buy, you know, credits for the meeting room, or you want to go see a psychologist in the metaverse and have a one-on-one session. So you can, you know, buy that time with that psychologist, that hour. So it's a digital service that you're purchasing through this metaverse.
So in the end, whatever we have in this physical world will be also sooner or later available in the in this world, in metaverse, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
We mentioned the biggest use case, which is gaming, right? What are actually the other use cases? I guess the number one or two has to be porn, right?
You know, funnily enough, porn is probably bigger in... when Second Life was one of the first metaverses that ever came out.
It's more just a VR, not a metaverse, right?
Yeah, so porn's more in VR. You have to have a headset, which, you know, there's a limited amount of users that have headsets that they put on a headset and they watch porn. And, you know, then you're going to have body suits, and then there's going to be all this new type of interaction in that space. And that's going to really explode the porn market, if you ask me my opinion, because... You won't only be able to, you'll be able to connect with, you know, other users with a bodysuit and a headset and have touch and feeling. And I've tried the Tesla suit. I don't know if you've heard of the Tesla suit, but that's a full bodysuit you put on. And, you know, like when they throw the grenade behind you, you feel the heat on your back and the wind's blowing in your face. You can really feel all these things in your full body. So that's going to, you know, you can just think of the applications that's going to be used for. It's going to be pretty ground disruptive to the current.
I just hope market. People will not stop having sex after this is like wireless spread, because even now we have problems with the fertility rate. So I can imagine that it's not going to get
it's
better.
It's definitely going to get worse, that, because you're going to have an AI model that can be designed specifically to your tastes, personalized and customized exactly to your needs, and she'll know all the right things to say to you that will, you know, get you touch all your right buttons. So, you know, are you going to want to go with, you know, it's going to be a combination. It's going to be very hard to know what humans will do, but there'll definitely be a lot of adoption of that new format. And, in terms of babies, you know, when we get to designer babies, and the babies are actually being created in the embryo, it's going to also change the whole concept of sex, because, you know, when a baby can be made in an embryo using the two eggs from the and even three eggs now they can actually combine a variety of eggs into one embryo, and then you know that the designer baby is going to be healthy. You know, that it's going to have blue eyes, or, you know, however you work it out, you know, it's going to have this certain amount of, you know, DNA, you know, strength or blonde hair or whatever the thing is. And you know that the mother is in no danger at all. There's no risk to the mother for having the baby. So you're going to have a combination. People are going to either have the real baby the normal way, or they're going to have a baby in an embryo that's much safer. And if you think it sounds crazy, that if you just
think
about it, does it sound crazy to you?
Yeah.
So one of our faculty talks about this, Kim Hewlett, about designer babies. And if you think about the idea when they said, we're going to cut you open and pull your baby out of your stomach, it sounded crazy. It sounded nuts. But now a lot of women choose to do that over natural birth because it's safer. it's meant to be safer, and it's much less pain for the woman. So they've opted for that route. Now, when you know there's nothing, there's no risk at all to the mother, and there's no risk at all to the baby. It's going to be a hard decision.
Got it. Still, it sounds crazy and kind of dangerous, but yeah, we're living in an exponential time. So I have no doubts that what you're describing will come. Anyway, let's move on. So we have use cases of VR / metaverse / augmented reality. What are other use cases come to your mind?
So I think one of the biggest use cases is going to be in education.
Okay.
And allowing for more immersive education that is engaging, that is practical. I think Edgar Dale said that we remember 2% of what we read. I can't remember the exact stats. Remember, 10% of what we hear. You remember a certain percentage of what we read and hear, but remember 80 to 90% of what we experience. And being in these immersive environments allows you to experience the learning in a much deeper way, which then, internalizes that you comprehend what you've just learned. So I think education is a great use case. And we've actually just completed something with Peter Diamandis from Abundance 360 and Singularity University, where we took his live content of Abundance 360 that happens over 21 hours over 4 days with some amazing speakers on AI, longevity, abundance, exponentials, and moonshots, like Tony Robbins. We spoke about moonshots. And instead of that being, over 4 days, we compressed it into short learning experiences into 90 minutes, and we made it a space adventure. So you arrive on the space station and you're an astronaut and you get to meet with other astronauts, and there's interactive exhibits where you can learn about all of Peter's inventions and startups. And then there's a group learning session for about 15 people. You hear the content on the space station. Afterwards, there's a bit of a group discussion. So you actually are discussing and with the cohort that it comes from all around the world together. So these new people are meeting from all around the world and learning together in this unique format and totally engaged, right? And then they have this discussion. Then they get onto the space shuttle. In the space shuttle, while you're traveling to the moon, we run a quiz. So you do a quiz and then an assessment, you land on the moon and you continue learning, and then you go to Mars and you keep going through this format. And over 90 minutes, you've had this immersive learning experience where you've engaged with others, you've conversed your ideas, you've debated, and you've had an assessment. And then at the end, instead of getting a certificate, you get a digital asset certificate, so an NFT certificate that proves you've done the course and stays with you for life, because you make it as a soulbound token, which is means that you can't transfer the NFT. So it stays with you, and you can use that as a credential for, in your career or for some type of
The education use case sounds really cool, because absolutely, instead of learning about the different rulers in the medieval age, instead of that, we will take the headset and experience that. And of course, like you said, this is going to be such an efficient way how to remember and know things.
Yeah, you can pull up objects. You can bring up 3D objects. What does the pyramids look like? Oh, let's pull it up in the lesson. The teacher pulls up the pyramid in the lesson as a 3D object. Everyone can look at the pyramid, and then they go inside the pyramid and start walking through the pyramid in 3D.
Sounds so cool. So cool. Yeah. Another, in my view, very interesting use case is actually meetings. Yes. Recently, there was the interview of Lex Fridman with Mark Zuckerberg in the metaverse. It was cool. I don't think it was cool for me as much as it was for Lex Fridman, because he said literally, I cannot explain how unbelievable and awesome it is.
Yeah.
So, but I can imagine, because I led a company with 6 different places of offices. So we obviously, logically, we got used to the hybrid meetings, which works really well, but it would work even better if actually we would feel like we are there all physically. So I guess this is a very interesting use case, don't you think?
Absolutely. I think meetings is going to be a massive use case in the very near future, actually. Mm. And what happened was when COVID hit, a lot of people were saying, I'm never going to do a Zoom meeting. And what is this Teams? What is this Hangouts? You know, I don't want to do that. But because of we had to do that, everyone got upskilled really quickly. And there was a lot of like, I can't hear you, I can't see you, people keeping their camera on when they're in the bath. Like there was a lot of nigglies that people have worked through. But today, you can have an online meeting very easily and it feels very natural and very comfortable, even though it is a flat format. And you don't know if anyone's looking in your eyes or where they're looking, or if they're even looking at you, they could be on another screen. So it still has that detachment and that impersonal connection. Whereas what they're doing in Meta now, they're making these Kodak avatars, which are these hyper-realistic avatars that look exactly like you and mimic your full emotion and movements. And then you can put on a headset and it's tracking all of your movements. And then you're in an environment with somebody else having a meeting as if you were really there. What we've currently launched in Africa Rare now are 11 African-inspired meeting rooms. So you can meet at Victoria Falls, or you can meet in Egypt, or you can meet, at the Okavango Jungle, or in Uganda. So it's quite an inspiring new way of meeting. You can share your webcam, you can throw things up on the screen, you can write sticky notes. It's got spatial audio, so you can go away and have little, brainstorms or work with your teams and come back together. So I think meetings is a great use case, and we're going to see, we've already booked over 150 meetings in Africa Rare in our meeting rooms. And I think this is going to be something that when corporates around the world take this up, it's a much better way of engaging with others. Because in the 3D world, you have that sense of physicality, which allows us to, our memory works with physicality. I'm going to remember you are here. I remember he's there and he's there. And there's a big light there, and that helps me put this whole scene together when I'm recalling this discussion. And it's much more engaging, So that's what this 3D world does. It creates a sense of physicality that allows us to engage with our memory better and engage with the whole environment and people in a more immersive way.
You mentioned the startup you co-founded, which is Africa Rare. So it's one of the metaverses is like focused only on Africa, or like tell us more about that.
Sure. So Africa Rare, we through our Singularity University learnings and teachings, we've dived into many technologies over the last 9 years. And, we bought robots and we 3D printers and we started getting involved with blockchain and we built a virtual reality studio. And through all of that tinkering and playing, when this digital asset and NFTs started to really come into the foreground, and this technology hit prime time where you could create these digital assets that were built on the blockchain using these smart contracts. It was a perfect opportunity for us to converge that with virtual reality. And in October 2021, we launched Africa Rare as Africa's first metaverse. It's Africa inspired. It's got a beautiful backstory about the history of humanity and creativity came out of Africa. And the land is called Ubuntu land, which means I am because we are. It's really a universal term in Africa about being together and building community. And there's a saying that says, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. So it's really this sense of let's lead in the future rather than chasing this tail of disruption, especially in Africa. And Africa is going to be home to a third of the world's children by 2030. So, or 2050. A third of the world's children. It's growing. The population is growing
as
immensely.
As opposed to Europe, yeah.
Yeah. And Tim Marshall just mentioned it's going to double in the next couple of years from 1.2 billion to 2.4 billion. So Africa is going to be a very, very important continent with many, many people that are very capable, but they just need the access, the education, and the empowerment to really engage with these technologies. But Africa Rare is powered by AR and mixed reality. We've brought a lot of artificial intelligence to help accelerate the development of AfriCareer. And, you know, we are, it's Africa inspired, but just like we worked with Peter Diamandis and we built out a space station on his land, on his experience, so we can do the same for all other countries. And we've got landowners that come from Geneva or from Spain. So people are buying from all around the world and engaging with us. And but we do have a very strong African heritage, and we are focusing on uplifting the people of the continent of Africa.
We didn't mention that you're actually from South Africa.
And right? I'm from South Africa. So I've got a big love for South Africa and for Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds cool. By the way, is it a good business? Does it seem to be a good business?
It's a fantastic business. Yeah.
What is the most expensive piece of land you managed to sell?
The most expensive piece of land, I don't think I can reveal that.
You can. Yeah. Huh? Nobody will listen to him.
That's a few $100,000. Okay. Let's just say that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. You said you're AI powered. That reminds me of one of the kind of problems.
I've got 36 landowners in Ubuntu land, B2B, B2C landowners.
How many about
36 brands.
Okay.
And then we've got about over 200 individual landowners.
Mm.
So we launched our one-by-one plots at $149, and they're currently selling for around $250
nice.
On the open market. And then we've got some very big landowners that are building out the experiences.
Mm. Well, who knows the metaverses knows that actually the graphics is still kind of crappy, which as far as I know has to do with a really demanding computing, because it's completely different to compute reality where there is thousands of people at the same time in real time. So that is why the graphics is so poor. Do you think it's an obstacle, or do you think it will be figured out how and when and so on?
No, absolutely. So if you think about the way it works, is that when a user logs into the metaverse, they're logging on their own device. So now the compute power is pulling off that device, if it's a mobile or a laptop or a headset, right? And obviously in the headset, it's designed specifically for the application, whereas on a phone, it's got a lot less compute power. So when you have a certain amount of people in an experience, it's all weighs on the weight of the polygons in the scene, right? So the actual amount of data in the scene, and devices just can't handle the performance. And this is a headset or something. So the best graphics are in the headsets at the moment. But on the laptop and the phone, if you want users to access it, you have to bring down the polygons, which are the little triangles that make up the objects in the scene. So you have to bring those down, and the materials and all types of different, and the lighting. So you have to bring all of that down so it will work on a phone or to work on a laptop. So at the moment, that is still evolving, but it's gonna as we come out with all these new devices and these new headsets, the Quest 3 is coming out from Facebook, so that it just keeps getting better and better and better. And I would say that the graphics at the moment are the worst they're ever gonna be. And as soon as they become more like the Kodak Meta characters and the hyper-realistic renderings, that's when VR disrupts reality. And we have a complete shift on what it means to be in person or what it means to be in the virtual environments. Because if we like this, you know, I could even come to the summit from South Africa and do my talk and then go put down my headset and carry on with the rest of my day in South Africa. And people wouldn't know, because the resolution is so good, they wouldn't matter to them. It doesn't make a difference. It looks completely real. So it's definitely coming. It's just a process of time and hardware and software and tooling to catch up.
Hmm. Can't wait for that. You mentioned Quest 3, which is a new device by Meta, right? Mark Zuckerberg was heavily promoting in the podcast with Lex Fridman.
Yes.
What devices have you tried? What devices would you recommend?
So I've been on devices since they first came out. We got the Oculus. The original Oculus, when it was a SDK and it plugged into your machine, it was quite a heavy device. I would say, you know, I've tried the Picos, I've tried, we tried Google Cardboards. At one stage, Google was trying to make these cardboards to make it accessible, and it was a very cheap solution using it with your phone. Then Oculus came out with a variety of headsets over the years, from the Go's to the Quests. The Quest 2 has been unbelievable. The Meta Quest Pro is a really, really amazing device. That's the resolution is incredible. The head tracking, it's really, that's the top device we have at the moment. And then the Quest 3 is going to be, there's a big race going on now, especially since Apple just announced their Vision Pro. It's really heated things up again. I think what happened was Meta came out with all this noise last year, over a year ago, they came out with this noise about the metaverse, and he made this incredible video, this vision of the future, and people thought that was now. And the media had a field day with him and lambasted Meta quite intensely. So that really hurt the entire metaverse industry, especially with Meta changing its name to Meta and then Meta getting all of the slack from the media. It hurt the entire industry over that time. But now, a year later, look at, you know, what they've been doing as practitioners, building and building and building, and they've come out with something really incredible. And the Quest 3 is a mixed reality headset that's going to be amazing.
Do you know the price, by the way?
I think it's $499, and it's $500 for that headset. So compared to the Apple Vision Pro, which is going to be, I think, $3,000 or something. Crazy. $3,500.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I guess you didn't have an opportunity to try Apple Vision, did you? Because it's like served only for the people living in Silicon Valley, right?
Yeah.
Some of them.
Still very under wraps, yeah. So it's still hard to get your hands on one of those. Mm. But you can develop for the Vision Pro. They have opened up for developers to work on how to develop on the Vision Pro. But I think when Apple comes out with the Vision Pro, it's really going to disrupt not just the headsets and not just laptops and phones. It's also going to disrupt TVs. And it's going to disrupt all types of media, screens, billboards. You don't need them anymore because it can be displayed in your headset. So it's going to disrupt a variety of industries and change the way those industries work.
Mick, you're really enthusiastic about all of that. I believe you every single word. But the truth be told, there is a kind of a slowdown of this old world. You mentioned the time when Facebook renamed themselves to Meta. It was a big hype of VR and metaverses. But now, since AI came and since, you know, the crisis and less money in the economy due to the interest rates and so on, there seems to be a downturn of the whole, you know, area. So I guess you believe it will come back.
Yeah. So, I mean, the downturn, I believe we're at the end of the downturn. It's been a downturn for quite a long time already. It's been a downturn since, I would say, March 2021. So that's already a year and a half or even longer that it's been hitting this downturn. And if you're looking at the current state, like with Mark coming out with this new Kodak avatars, with the Vision Pro coming, it's ready for prime time again, the metaverse. And I think everyone's been building in this quiet winter that we've been going through. And it's definitely going to come back. AI is just enabling for it to come back, because AI, the amazing thing about AI is that it's based on data. The more data you can put in, the better the AI can work. And that data is centralized. So it's centralized data. It works off a centralized system, AI. Whereas blockchain technology works off a decentralized system and is all based on trust and privacy and transparency, right? So now these two technologies converging are going to benefit one another, because AI will help it accelerate through knowledge and through big data centralized. But to create that unique identifier, you need the blockchain, and to, you know, prove deep fakes and that something is real and it's not just an AI or it's not just some other type of scam or fake or, you know, illicit activity, the blockchain will be able to prove it's
so
on the ledger.
The spring is coming, yeah.
The spring is coming. Spring is coming.
We have to speed up, Mick. On top of being the co-founder of Africa Rare, you also set up a business with two of your brothers, right? It has a nice name, Manmade. What is it about? What do you do?
So Manmade's been running for about 24, 25 years, and it's a brand experience agency. where we, you know, give power to storytellers and brands, and it's we run very large scale events. And
so like an agency.
It's an agency. Yeah. We do animation, okay. Virtual reality.
So I guess
that type of thing, above the line, below the line campaigns.
So it's like all kind of old fashioned agency, but I guess you're trying to use many of the new things, in the business, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
You are also a podcaster, Mick, which I like because I'm also a podcaster. you said when we were off record, you said that recently you managed to shoot 14 podcasts in a single day, which is crazy, Mick. Today I'm shooting four of them and you're a third, and I'm starting to be exhausted.
A little bit sad, yeah.
So tell me, like, why do you do it? What do you like about that? Some tips and tricks, and what kind of podcasts you listen to the most, for example?
So I think, you know, for me, it was, you know, the opportunity to create knowledge and learning for and bring it back to Africa was such a critical problem that I wanted to solve. Because when you go to these Singularity University events around the world, or these amazing technology and innovations summits, you meet these amazing people that are changing the world, that are, you know, either through academics or through their companies, and I just thought it would be a great time to engage with them. And one of the things I would do is I would have, you know, I would make sure that I knew exactly the material and the content I wanted to get for the cut, and I kept it tight, like I ran a tight ship to get it done. And the benefit of doing them more of so many in a day is that you fill up your production line and your schedule. So that, you know, you can have a very long tail of new episodes coming out, and that was very very good for us. And especially in the pandemic, when the pandemic hit, it was very important to try, you know, create positivity, create optimism in a time when there wasn't any. So I used the podcast as a way to communicate ideas and to try uplift people, you know, rather than let them just read headlines and become negative and unhappy and just part of the ecosystem instead of a leader in the ecosystem.
You know why I started to shoot podcasts? Because as a CEO, I had a very interesting network of people, really clever people, really interesting to talk to. So I was like, you know, having lunches with them, listening to them. And then I was like, what a pity that others can see
exactly
what a person is saying. So I was like, no, I have to start shooting it, recording that. And I still love it. I started also during the pandemic. So it's a long time. This podcast is not about my podcast. It's about you. And we have to finish, honestly.
Sure.
So last question, which I'm asking all of my guests here at the Singularity event. And that is, if the world will be better in 100 years time than it is now, or worse, and why?
Very, very hard to actually say
it
what
is.
Will happen. I'm sure. I would love to hear what some of the other people have answered. But I think if based on the idea of being an optimist and believing that the world will get better, and that if we, you know, using technology, we will live for much longer periods of time as human beings with a very healthy lifespan. So you'll be 150, but you're going to look like you're 18 and you're going to feel like you're 18. And what does that do to people's minds and how, you know, they want to, you know, and how they're going to want to live their lives? It's going to really change the way we operate in humanity. But I believe it will get better. You know, and as long as we don't get taken out by some evil leaders or dictators or things like that, which is possible, you know, it's totally possible. Some controlling AI that could take us out. As long as those things don't happen, I think it will get better. And I think humans are innately good, and you know, they want to do good in the world. It's just, how do you bring that out, and how do you embrace with these technologies to be the architects of the future? Because it really is up to everyone to create the future and the world we want to live in.
Hmm. You answered that really well, Mick. Similarly, to a certain extent, similarly as the other guests.
Okay,
and
awesome.
I truly agree with that. In other words, if the world exists in 100 years' time, then I suppose it will be better than it is now.
And we might even be in a simulation, you know, we're in phase four of the simulation. Like, I'm actually being played by another character, my original character, was somebody else.
Oh, I hope that this is not true. Mick, thanks for coming.
Thanks so much.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.